What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. In today's episode, the Nets fall short. Dwayne Haskins is a Steeler, and John Harbaugh isn't worried about his offense. But we begin today with the new coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, a man who I never heard of until about 2 p.m., Nick Sirianni, who this morning was the offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts. Sirianni fits the recent profile of first-time head coaches in that he is 39 and a recent coordinator. Wilbon, what do you make of this hire?
Tony, what I make of this hire has very little to do with this gentleman who the Eagles have just hired. What I make of this hire is, once again, it's like we're back in the 1980s when people couldn't understand that Tony Dungy was going to be a terrific coach. Not just a good coach, which would have been reason enough to hire him, but a great coach who would win a Super Bowl and prepare another franchise to win a Super Bowl. We've gone back to a place where people are not looked at or not taken seriously enough or not valued because they're black. This is a place that I cannot believe that the NFL has gone back to, that they will hire somebody. Used to, the excuse for some people like Eric Bieniemy and not hiring him already was, well, you know, he was OC, but he didn't call the plays. Well, neither is this gentleman that the Eagles just hired. He didn't call the plays either. The Eagles have a guy, and I'm not saying the Eagles are the only one on the hook here, but Deuce Staley's in the building. He's been a running backs coach, a guy that people have interest in. And so once again, we're going through a hiring season where you look around and you go, I'm sorry, are we in 1964? What are we doing here? And the NFL looks, it ought to be embarrassed, the league and the teams. I don't think they are, but it's an indictment, Tony, of where pro football is, where the NFL is today, that we're even having this discussion now.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused by this hire because I thought, as you thought, that it was a point of emphasis for the NFL to hire minority coaches. They hired one at the moment, Robert Saleh, at the moment. I guess we're waiting to see what happens with Eric Bieniemy in Houston, and if he's hired, at least that would be another hire. There are two recently named black general managers in the league in Atlanta, right? And where's Atlanta and Detroit? And both those teams hired white coaches. And I guess what I wonder is, are those the hires of the general managers or are those the hires of the owner? I don't want to be told who to hire, and I wouldn't want to tell somebody who to hire. But the pattern here indicates what I think is being referred to as institutional racism, that people who should be able to get a job aren't getting those jobs. And because I think the NFL has been so overt in saying, hire these people, I'm not as hard on the NFL as you are, but it clearly lands to me on ownership. It does to me.
Well, Tony, I'm harder on the NFL in part because there's a whole lot of head coaches not worth a damn. You know, I plow this ground pretty frequently and have for years. The people that they're hiring, they're not Tom Landry, and, you know, they're not Joe Gibbs, and they're not Bill Parcells in a lot of cases. I think the head coaching in the NFL is worse than it's been in the past 40 years. That, you know, I've been on this kick long before this, before we started talking about specifically identifying, you know, the race or ethnicity of every coach. Coaching in the NFL ain't impressive. In a lot of places, it's not worth a damn. But yet, some of those guys get hired again and again while other guys sit on the sideline. Again, maybe the new Tony Dungy. Yes, I'm lining it up by race because we need to. And you say, wow, I covered the NFL 40 years ago, Tony, when Tony Dungy could barely get an interview, much less a job. And now we're talking about this for other candidates who might just come up and be Super Bowl contenders. It ought to be embarrassing for the NFL. I doubt it is.
There are a lot of these guys in their late 30s. Most of them are white. Brian Flores at Miami is black. They hired this guy, Dan Campbell, who I remember, gave him 6 years in Detroit. I remember him as a screaming, muscle-bound, crazy person as an interim coach in Miami. I wouldn't have given him 1 year, but... All right, we move to John Harbaugh. Wilbon, I think that's a coach you think is good. His Ravens were eliminated from the playoffs after scoring just 3 points against Buffalo. He said the Ravens are not changing their offense. Harbaugh said he intends to extend Lamar Jackson's contract. Lamar Jackson now 1-3 in the playoffs. And Harbaugh said, quote, we've built the best run offense in the history of football the last 2 years. So let's continue to grow that and build that, unquote. Wilbon, is Harbaugh right to stick with his offense despite its struggles in the playoffs?
I would certainly defend that position, Tony. Most teams don't get to the playoffs, and everybody except the Super Bowl winner struggles. So I don't think it's a valid reason to just throw everything out that you've got. Harbaugh also talked about building a team around the skill set of those players. I know I wish some other coaches would adopt that philosophy about building around the talent they do have. But Steve Smith and Kurt Warner, they raised perfectly legitimate criticism, and Harbaugh probably took exception to that. And they're talking about the sort of too simplistic nature of the pass offense. And both things can be true. It is, to them, overly simplistic. But if you've got that kind of running attack, then build around that and keep going. It's not like they're going 6-10 every year and they have no shot. They go into the playoffs with a reasonable shot. So I can see both these points, Tony, but if I'm Harbaugh, I don't think I'm making a radical change.
Thank you for mentioning Steve Smith, a wonderful pass receiver, a guy who spent his last 3 years in a league with Baltimore, probably played for Harbaugh, I'm pretty sure. He called their offense, their passing offense, elementary school. Elementary school. They only go to the tight end, Mark Andrews. They rarely go wide, rarely go down the field. They're dead last, 32nd in passing offense. Now, what you say is right about their run offense, but if you want to see the problems with that, get a tape of the Buffalo game, because Buffalo concentrating on stopping Lamar Jackson's running. He's a great runner. He's gone over 1,000 yards 2 seasons in a row. But they cut him off, and nothing came from that was good for Baltimore. In the two playoff games this year, he's got 341 yards total passing, which isn't any good, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a pick six, and 23 points. So there's got to be a balance. Help him out, Mike. Help him out. Get him wide receivers.
Agreed, Tony. Help him out in the draft. Yes, in the draft and free agency, get some wide outs out there. By the way, all the prolific quarterbacks – last weekend, how'd their passing numbers look? They didn't do jack. They didn't. So these are team efforts. Sorry to sound the cliche bell, but I'm not laying all this at the foot of the philosophy of the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not.
All right, we move now to the Brooklyn Nets at full strength, losing in double overtime to the worst offensive team in the NBA, Cleveland, and letting them get 147 points. Kyrie Irving played 48 minutes in his return to the team. He scored 37 points. Kevin Durant had 38 points in 50 minutes. James Harden had a triple-double in 51 minutes. Wilbon, does last night make you optimistic or pessimistic about the new-look Nets?
Well, there are reasons for both, and as I told you yesterday, I have no judgments to make on the Nets until it's time, until we get into April, and they better get into May, and they probably better get into June. That's when we decide what the Nets are. But let me hit a couple of quick points. You got Sexton scoring 42 points. So Kyrie Irving gave up a lot of those. It is not just enough to come out and score. Kendrick Perkins was the smartest voice I heard all day on the topic of the Nets. And, of course, he played with a couple of these guys. And he's talking about their defense. He also talked about the fact, Tony, you mentioned the minutes played. You can't just run Kevin Durant. If you're Steve Nash, you can't run Kevin Durant or even James Harden into the ground in terms of minutes now. And Perkins says, start Kyrie, sit him after 6 to 8 minutes in the first quarter, and then get him back on the floor to play with the second unit. Because of that trade of Harden, you got rid of all your depth. But they still have Landry Shamet. They still have Joe Harris. Maybe Kyrie needs to be on the floor with them more than he needs to be on the floor with Durant and Harden. It sounded perfectly reasonable, and then some, for Perk to suggest that to me.
It's not about talent. They got 96 points. You're supposed to win a game if three guys get 96 points. You don't win because you play no defense at all. Cleveland came into that game shooting 44% in the bottom third of the league. They walked out of there. They hit 51% from the field and 50% from three. Colin Sexton, who you mentioned, had 20 points in 10 minutes in the overtimes. Kyrie Irving is allegedly on him. What jumped out to me, Mike, is something you're saying. Kevin Durant had no leg last year. What are you doing playing him 50 minutes?
Yes.
I mean, you can't play your best players those kinds of minutes on a Wednesday night in Cleveland. It's insane. You can't do that. And what also is insane is Kyrie Irving taking twice as many shots as James Harden, 28 to 14. So ultimately, and I know we agree on this, is it going to be 3-for-1 or is it going to be each one out for himself? That's their season. Can they work together? That's it.
Yep.
Let's take a
depth
break.
And defense.
It's still to
depth
come.
And defense.
Dwayne Haskins has a new team. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Will he find more success with the Steelers?
And will the Wizards, are they still in the league, be able to make up all the games they're missing?
Yeah, barely.
Man, I don't know, Tony. But
so
Kyrie.
This is a Washington, D.C. B segment. Makes me happy.
Oh, it is.
PTI fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite PTI episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and First Take ad-free as well. They also have your favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/PTI. That's Amazon.com/PTI to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
It's our fourth straight day of mail time, which is three too many, but let me get the first one.
What's wrong with mail time? Right. Why are you hating on mail time?
Do you think the Steelers are a good fit? Do you think the Steelers are a good fit for former Washington quarterback Dwayne Haskins, your neighbor?
Tony, it's hard to tell where he'd be a good fit. Here's the thing. He could be a good fit a lot of places if he's going to put in the kind of work that is necessary to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. I mean, the Washington football team didn't make any bones about what it is they found problematic with Haskins. And what I'm thinking is the Steelers must have had a pretty high grade on Haskins when he was at Ohio State. Everybody looked at him. He was a first-round pick. So if they had a high grade on him and they think they can pull out of him what is in there, and if they can get him to take the lead and work to the level that every club thinks an NFL quarterback needs to, then okay, he could be a fit in more than one place.
Yeah, I get the sense this might be his last chance, and the Steelers are a good place to have your last chance because they are a stable organization and they've been quarterback friendly for about 45 years. So that is a good place for him to fit in. Two different Washington coaches didn't want him. Jay Gruden didn't want him. Ron Rivera didn't want him. He wasn't particularly good on the field, and it was bad off the field. It just didn't work out, and nobody on that team seemed to defend him. I like Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger, in this case, has won maybe 2 years left at the most, if that. Mason Rudolph has not lit up the league. This kid had 50 touchdowns, 50 touchdown passes in his year at Ohio State. That's really a lot. There's something there because he was a first-round pick. But it's how much, and I know you would agree with this, Mike, how much has he learned from the way he left Washington?
Yes.
Will he
yes,
work
Tony,
hard?
No question.
And be rewarded in that, yeah.
And Tomlin, yeah. Mike Tomlin's not going to coddle him. Mike Tomlin's going to be demanding on him.
No chance. Absolutely. Are you confident the Wizards will be able to make up all of their postponed games?
No. They're not going to. I'm confident they won't. No, you're not going to cram in, you know, back-to-back-to-backs and five games and seven nights or whatever. No, they're not going to make them up. This is the world that we and professional athletes, sports, teams live in now. And so, no, Tony, I said this during baseball, and they had built in a little wiggle room. I guess basketball could push the season if the NBA wanted to do that. But no, I don't see the Wizards making up all these games. Maybe they make up a few. We don't even know if they've reached the end of the games that have to be canceled yet. We don't even know where they are in that.
So I think they probably can make them up if need be. I think the NBA has built in an arrangement for all their teams, like all sports have built in an arrangement. But it is also possible, Mike, the Wizards are right now a last place team. They may not have any impact on the playoffs whatsoever, so they won't have to make up all these games. If you care about health and safety, you can't make people play 5 days in a row. I mean, it just because your star players are playing all the minutes, it's not going to work. But as a resident of Washington, D.C., there's a larger question for me. How did this happen? Was there a super spreader event? Did they violate the protocols in some egregious way? Or is it just bad luck? I would like to know this. We got the sense in other sports with other teams how this happened, and I don't know it here. And I live here, and I follow the team. I'd like to know it. Enough email. And this time I truly mean it. Let's take one last break, but still to come, could we see college basketball conference tournaments get canceled? Yes.
Wow. We're going to have explanations for that, too. Joel Embiid puts up 42-10 in a win over the Seas. Could Embiid be the MVP?
Yeah, but not in January. In January, you're not awarding this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Happy time, people. Happy 58th birthday, Akeem Olajuwon. A two-time NBA champion with Houston, a two-time Finals MVP, the league MVP in 1994, a 12-time All-Star, six-time All-NBA First Team, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, the NBA career leader in blocks, five-time All-Defensive First Team, ninth all-time in steals, 11th all-time in points, 14th all-time in rebounds, which brings up this question, Wilbon. Is Olajuwon the greatest basketball player born outside the United States? Olajuwon came to our attention at the University of Houston, where he was an All-American, and he led the NCAA in rebounding. He was drafted number one overall, and he justified the pick with those championships. But Michael Jordan went number three in that draft. And you have to wonder how the history of basketball would have changed if Jordan had played in Houston and not in Chicago. As a naturalized citizen, Olajuwon played on our gold medal Olympic basketball team in Atlanta, and both the University of Houston and the Houston Rockets retired Olajuwon's number 34.
If he'd been born on the moon, he'd be the greatest player born outside of whatever, Saturn's rings. I mean, it was just wondrous watching Akeem. Although, Tony, it's fair to wonder if Houston wins those two championships if Jordan hadn't retired. Just ask him.
Oh, okay, that's fair. Happy anniversary, Peyton Manning. On this day 14 years ago, Manning led the Colts from a 21-3 first-half deficit to beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship on Manning's way to his first Super Bowl victory. It was always special when Manning played Tom Brady. Brady is 11-6 all time over Manning, but Manning is 3-2 over Brady in playoff games. He's 3-1 in AFC championships for Indianapolis and Denver. Manning was 2-2 in Super Bowls, tying his younger brother Eli for most Super Bowls in the nuclear family. Since retiring, Manning has made great television commercials. He has probably had enough free time to watch his old rival Brady continue to play in championship games. One of the most charming moments in sports last year for me was watching Tiger and Phil and Brady and Manning playing that golf match. Manning got back out there with Phil and also Steph Curry and Charles Barkley a couple of months ago. Peyton Manning is so comfortable at everything. They ought to bring back wide world of sports, and they ought to let Peyton Manning host it.
Tony, that's a great idea. Let me hug you virtually for that idea. But Peyton will probably say, I got too many things going on. But wouldn't you love to see Peyton Manning take us through the week in sports every week? That'd be awesome.
I would. Happy trails to Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott. Scott's 11-year run as commissioner will end in June, 1 year ahead of his contract's end date. Scott, 56, oversaw the expansion of the conference from 12 teams to 12 from 10. He added Utah and Colorado and the launch of the Pac-12 network. Scott earned $5.3 million a year, but in the 11 years Scott ran the Pac-12, the once mighty conference basically disappeared in the two major revenue sports, football and basketball. No Pac-12 team won the national championship in football in Scott's tenure. Oregon had some good teams with Chip Kelly, but no Pac-12 team was in the playoffs this year, last year, or the year before. USC, which had a great program for decades, is now a shadow. The same can be said for UCLA basketball, once the gold standard. The only Pac-12 team in the Final Four during Scott's 11-year tenure was Oregon in 2017. The Pac-12 is a Power 5 conference in name only.
No, Tony, I disagree with you a little bit. I mean, the Pac-12, if we take the long-standing footprints, we're not talking about Maryland and New York and the Big Ten, but if we're talking the Pac-12, you got L.A., San Francisco, Phoenix, and Seattle. Those are four of the 12 or 13 biggest markets in America. Don't tell me the Pac-12 shouldn't be a more important conference. They need to get back there, but I would disagree with you. They're still a Power 5 conference.
No, they don't win championships. They should be much better than this. Let's go to the Big Finish.
We agree on that.
Your boy Joel Embiid had 42-10 as the Sixers beat the Celtics. Is this a big deal?
Tony, if the Sixers are going to be in there challenging not just the Celtics but Brooklyn, Embiid and Ben Simmons have to be great. Now, not later, right now. CBS Sports surveyed 41 college basketball coaches, 27% of whom said they don't want to play a conference tournament this March. Does that make sense to you?
It's a high number to me. These guys are basketball coaches. What do you mean they don't want to play a conference tournament? You're a basketball coach. Rory McIlroy shot an 8-under-64 to lead the Abu Dhabi championship. Is that significant?
Tony, I think you get money on the way in. If you win, you get money on the way out. That's always significant. The Warriors beat the Spurs by 22 last night. You impressed with that?
I like the Warriors. Like Curry, like Kerr. Yeah, last one. Lakers and Bucks tonight. Who you got in that one?
Tony, the Lakers don't lose on the road. The Bucks need to win. They need to come back and beat them. But I got the Lakers tonight. They're undefeated on the road.
Out of time. Try and do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
And I'm Mike Wilbon. Same time tomorrow, knuckleheads. You can get the PTI podcast on the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts. Now, here's SportsCenter.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.